Now on the Business Radio X Network, just Ask the Gals, social media solutions and education.
Welcome, and thank you for joining another episode of Two Busy Gals, our company with Ask the Gals. We are broadcasting as part of Business Radio X. We are coming to you from Tucson, Arizona, in the Stewart Title Building on East Broadway. My name is Jessica Podolsky. Today is our topic is going to be women-owned businesses and access to capital. So you know we focus on social media, so one of the things we'll be looking at is how social media helps or hinders women's understanding their role and accessing capital. Today we are joined by Rachel Burgoyne with Axion and Christy Lee with Commerce Bank of Arizona. Rachel and Christy, thank you for joining us.
Pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much for the invite.
My co-host today is the amazing gal Lisa Benson. Thanks for co-hosting, Lisa. We couldn't do many things at Two Busy Gals without you. Lisa, share a little bit about Two Busy Gals and what's your role with Two Busy Gals.
Thanks, Jessica. My name is Lisa Benson, and I have been with Two Busy Gals for about a year and a half now. The business has been around for 11 years now, and we focus on social media management. And what that means is we teach people how to manage their social media for their businesses, or we can manage it all for them.
Awesome. So, Rachel, I know that you're with Axion and that you manage the Arizona market. Can you tell us a little bit about what your business is and what you do with it?
Sure. So, Axion is a nonprofit. We've been around for 25 years, and we're headquartered in Albuquerque, New Mexico. We serve the five of the southwestern states, so New Mexico, Arizona, Colorado, Nevada, and Texas. And our whole mission is to find entrepreneurs who cannot find a loan through a bank or a credit union and then provide that through our funding. We are an alternative lender, so we are not, we're not in the traditional banking system. We're not regulated by the government, but we do still choose and opt into, being a CDFI, which means we're still somewhat regulated and kept an eye on by the government. And we can use private funds, we can use some government funds, and we use those to fund entrepreneurs around the state that I mentioned.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm so glad you're here. We have so many questions for you. So Christy, you're the vice president of commercial lending. Uh-huh. You're native to Tucson. So yeah. We get a lot of transplants like myself. So tell us a little bit about what's unique about the opportunities you have for businesses and financing.
We are the last locally owned community bank in Tucson. And what that means to our business market is we're typically the first place that a new business will come to be able to get financing. We can be a little more strategic in our methods of lending. We can get a little more think outside the box. We can work really directly with the customer if it makes sense and the relationship is there. We can tend to go out a little bit. Mm-hmm. We have solid partnerships with places like Rachel's Axion. There's quite a few others. There's Business Development Finance Group. There's SBA Financing. There's a whole slew of programs out there that we are partnered with that help that customer take a step if they're not quite ready. We have the wherewithal to work with those customers and help them get to a point where they do become bankable at some point. So if I'm not able to do a deal for them, I might be able to suggest they talk with Rachel. Rachel can get the deal done. We can keep the deposit relationship, keep the relationship going from a bank point of view, and eventually groom them back to us. And sometimes those customers outgrow us because we are just a small community bank that is there for that startup company or the junior company, and as they grow, sometimes they'll outgrow the need for a community bank and they need to go bigger.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like that's going to be a great resource for our listeners to get them information about. Mm-hmm. So what inspired our topic today? Two Busy Gals, we're in the social media business. We're not in the finance business. Well, we're in the applying for finance business and the wanting finance business. But basically a couple things inspired the topic for us. The first was recently there's been just a social media superstar by the name of Arlan, A-R-L-A-N, Hamilton.
and she has a investment fund called Backstage Capital. If you haven't heard, Arlen is really shaking things up in the VC world. And for those of that are really new, that means venture capital. So those are investors separate from the kinds of people we're talking to today. It's a little hard to get a venture capitalist to show up on a podcast, but next time we will, because I have a line into a local venture capitalist that wants to come talk to us about what they've done here locally. So that'll be kind of a cool show. She's created a $36 million fund specifically for Black female founders, and she was a cover story last fall in Fast Company. And so there was just so much social media buzz around her that I actually found out about her on Twitter, because I tend to follow a lot of like what's happening, women in business, that kind of information. I use Twitter as an information resource, sort of like a news filtering. You know, I kind of follow topics I want to follow, and then Twitter tells me stories that are happening. So I want to give you a quick excerpt of from the article with her to give a taste of why she got our attention. So this is a quote from her interview. "It was crazy to me that 90% of venture funding was going to white men when it's not how innovation, intelligence, and drive is dispersed in the real world. I had no background in finance, but I saw the problem. Maybe it's just because I was coming from such a different place, I could recognize it. So 3 years ago, this 34-year-old woman packs up from Texas and goes to Silicon Valley and is like, I want to change this. She had no college degree, no network, no money. She's like one of those really crazy, like you got the idea and you're inspired to do it and you just did it, which is kind of neat to me. So she got her first funding. She had done, I mean, she was a music tour manager. She had done different things. I mean, it wasn't like she just was hanging out at the bus station and said, hey, I'll do this, but it wasn't her background, which I find often tends to be the tale and story of women who get, my background was not in marketing. Lisa wasn't necessarily having a background in social media, but the opportunities present themselves. And I find women often bring that toolbox, that, you know, that skill set to them. So before we go a little further with this story, like, have you experienced that you've seen sort of like women sometimes have this breakout role? So Christy, you're nodding ahead here in the studio. So I think you've got something to say here.
Mm-hmm. My degree was elementary education.
That's not banking.
No, not even close. My firstborn son was born with a major disability. So once I got done with school and he was now in the world, his level of care was so much that working was not in my cards for a while until things got a little more stabilized with him. And by the time he was stable, we're talking probably around 1990, TUSD was the majority school district in Tucson. And so in my mind, what I was finding out was I was really having to fight for his rights as a special needs child. And I felt like if I went back to teach, there would be a conflict of interest there. How do I fight for his rights against my employer, per se? So I did not go back to work. I proceeded to have baby two and then baby three. And after baby three, I was climbing the walls and I went back to work just on a part-time basis as a teller, just thinking it would get me out of the house. And next thing I knew, I had the gift of gab. I became a top seller. I got promoted very quickly and eventually ended up in a full career in real estate. So it's kind of been a combination of banking and title and escrow and 1031 exchanges and business development and now commercial lending. And to go back and teach at this point, I could never afford that. And why would I? I'm making four times the money I would make as a
exactly.
teacher. And that's kind of where my world took a different turn. As the female in the household, it was up to me to make that sacrifice career-wise, and I think women do that far more than men do.
Yeah, I see that a lot. Rachel, did you have, or Lisa?
Yeah,
we're just going to just chime in, so don't wait for me to call on you.
I handle a lot of inquiry calls, mm-hmm. so people who either find us online, find my number there, or they get referred to me by a banker or someone from a credit union or from a, you know, a local business resourcing, you know, organization of some sort, like the SBDC or SCORE. Or the YWCA, and through these inquiries, I get a lot of interesting conversations. But what I would find consistently, no matter how interesting the conversation, often I'll have some sort of concrete follow-up or feedback for the client. And I'll say, hey, you're not quite ready for financing yet. I need you to go meet with this person and work on your business plan, or I need you to work on your credit score and come back when it's, you know, about 20 points higher. Whatever the feedback is, I find that women often have a higher rate of following through on that. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that women are inherently, you know, better at that than men. But I do think that for women that are trying to branch out into the business world for the first time, a lot has often held them back internally on being a leader, on pursuing capital. And when they get that time and that feedback, they follow up with it and they come back to me more often, I think, because they are really excited someone is willing to spend the time and invest mm-hmm. in them. And again, for a lot of them, it's just a confidence booster to have somebody willing to partner with them and work with them to try and, you know, maybe if we can't help them now, maybe to help them 6 months from now. So,
interesting. Yeah. I think, and that's kind of why I wanted to pause, because I have some more information about Arlen Hamilton. But sometimes I get a little frustrated with news articles or business articles that the way in which they promote the person and the information is if they were hanging out at the park and said, I'm going to become a venture capitalist. I'm going to go find some. And she did sleep at the airport. I mean, very few people can afford to live in San Francisco. So, I mean, she sort of had this crazy story. But prior to that, she was a tour manager for bands and music. You know, she brought a skill set, right, of organizing, of mobilizing people, of putting mm-hmm. a project together. Some of the things I think women who pursue entrepreneurial endeavors don't take into consideration. You know, if you organize a fund drive at your school, or you have raised money for a sports team and kept, you know, Lisa, you're really active in 4-H as one of your volunteer things. Mm-hmm. And someone asked me, they said she volunteers. I said, well, it's 4-H. What would she do? They go, oh, I thought that was like another job she had because she does so much. It's someone we know through business. I was like, oh, wow. No. That's a volunteer. They were like, wow, we undervalue the skill set we build doing that mm-hmm. and how that can map on to an entrepreneurial endeavor, right? I mean, it's not going to change the numbers. It's not going to change my credit score. It's not going to change I had a bankruptcy, or I have bad history with this, or I don't have a business plan. But to have people on the other side of that finance table say, these are valuable, go get these resources, you know, SCORE, who, what have you, WBC, who have you. Get these resources on paper in a way that reflects this incredible skill set you have, right? And that kind of reminds me of what you were saying when you got to kid three, Christy, where you're sort of like, oh my gosh, I have to do something. And how do we create an environment, which was part of the reason of the topic of this podcast, was to create an environment where through social media, we can change that dialogue. So it's not like this mystery person had a magic recipe for cookies and now she's franchised it and she's a multimillionaire. And then you go, how did that work? Like, how'd she get the money like for the first KitchenAid mixer? You know, like, when she had to go commercial and get insurance and all those things that you go, oh, I need workers' comp. I need all those different kinds of things that you go, okay, forget it. I'm just going to be an at-home caterer. I'm not going to take the next step. So I think that's just, I thank you for coming and talking today, because I think that's the information we want to get out, is how powerful that is. And the stories, you know, we chatted a little bit before last week and we're like, there's so many stories that are powerful. And how do we take that natural storyteller gift that not all, but a lot of women have, and show them that's sales, that's marketing, that's the narrative in your business plan. How do we get them to see that piece?
Well, I can tell you personally, just from the story that I just said,
sure,
you know, as a teacher by passion, as a lender today, I'm able to educate my clients on what they're signing and what they're doing. And I've been able to establish some very solid relationships because they feel like for the first time they understand what they're signing, which builds the one key instrument for relationships, and that's trust. So I'm using my teaching really every day.
Right? The same skill set. It's just a different student.
Absolutely.
It's a different student. It's a different curriculum.
Correct.
And you can make it easier to understand because of that background.
Absolutely. That's awesome. So just to go back, I highly encourage people to look up Arlen Hamilton. What you'll find out is she now, because it became hot, so she's got people like Slack, which is a well-known venture capital firm. She has Aaron Levy, who's the CEO. So they their first three, their in their first round of seed funding, they gave out $25,000 to $100,000 to startups. They did everything from beauty products to business analytics. They had around, and of all 100 that they gave the original funding out to, the founder had to be a woman, a person of color, or someone who identifies as LGBTQ. They were very purposeful about that. They were like, this is underrepresented. And so what's been interesting is this got me thinking, I've been in business 11 years. Technically, I've had a business for 11 years. I've had a tax EIN. The first year, my sister and I weren't quite sure what the heck we were going to do. There was Mary Kay and purses. And, you know, I came from a training nonprofit background. She came from the service industry. We're like, what are we doing? Then we were using social media to market. So about 10 years ago, businesses, you go to vendor events, you go to networking. They're like, hey, what do you mean you use Facebook? How, right? I say Twitter was my MBA program because the first 3 years I was in business, I followed like 10 accounts that were leaders in the industry nationally. And that's how I learned about business. Like things like, what are you going to name your company and why? Are you naming it after yourself? Or are you naming it after a product? Or are you picking something that's broader? And why would you choose each of those? Because they all have pros and cons. But I'd really say we've been in business the last 5 years because that's when we got serious about paying attention to financials, having outsourcing bookkeeping because it's something I'm not great at. You know, I can do it competently, but it stresses me out and then I don't want to do it. And then I'm stressed out because I'm not doing it, right? So then you're more stressed out because you're not doing it. And then it just turns in. And so what would happen is this was my business. I full disclosure, I was terrible at invoicing. I was great at paying bills, but I was terrible at invoicing clients. And then time would go by and I'd feel like an idiot because I hadn't sent the invoice. And I've talked to other people who do this and they never send it to get paid because they're like embarrassed because it, like time's gone by to send the invoice and get paid. And so they just drop it, right? Which is kind of an insane way to run business. Do you know what I mean? Like, even if you got a bill and it was like, oh, that was 3 months ago, I thought, even if so, like, so what? Who hasn't got a bill? And go, did we pay that? Did we not pay that? Did they just bill us? I mean, even from large companies, that happens. Mm-hmm. But somehow, ethically, as this small business, I thought, oh, they won't think I'm professional, so I just worked for free. And I've talked to other business owners who did the same thing. So just the power of outsourcing bookkeeping and invoicing, because, in fact, the bookkeeper said, you know, you're doing this. It's not that hard. You know, the software, it's like click, click. You're really capable of doing this. I don't know if you should pay me. I said, I'm paying you for the psychological more than the task. Because whatever that is, it's stopping me from moving forward.
Yeah, I would just echo that that's a really good piece of advice for any business owner because I'm sure Christy as well, we run into many scenarios where there's a business that cannot show me how well they're doing because their data, their financials aren't accurate. And so they'll say, I know we've done more than this in revenues, but this is how much I kept track of. And
exactly.
I love that they're being honest, but I'm also have to be straightforward with them saying, well, our underwriters can't account for the revenue, then this is
exactly
what we see. And this is what we are going to base our figures on. So,
yeah. And it was just really challenging. Do you know what I mean? And the really embarrassing part was I wasn't even in the position of being a business owner who didn't understand a P&L. Like I had had some, oh, you know, like you're in grad school and someone at church has a business and you pick up a job and you're in the accounts receivable office, right? And so you kind of learn some basic stuff. So I could read a P&L. I knew what I needed to be looking at. I knew what a financial projection should look like. But sitting down to do all of it made me ill. And not even because it looked bad. I was so afraid I'd make a mistake. I wasn't trained. I'm not smart enough. I'm not a big enough expert. I need someone that's certified. You know, instead of trusting, at the end of the day, there were people for hundreds of years that ran businesses with those projections with, you know, a piece of paper and a pencil. And then they were happy to get a slide ruler and abacus. I don't know. But you know what I'm saying? It's that so somehow we've like given up our trust in ourselves to experts. And I don't know if that's across the board for men and women, but I see women a lot of times, they'll ask us, Lisa, you can speak to that in social media. We have people come to us and it's like they don't trust even something as simple as posting on Facebook. They don't trust that they know how to do it because you've had some client experiences with that where they're just like, they know how to do it, but they don't trust themselves to do it.
Right. Yeah. So they come to me and I have to walk them through it step by step. But in reality, they knew what they were doing. They just weren't 100% sure of it.
Yeah. And so while we're glad to do that, and it's part of our business model to, you know, to do coaching, it's still, it strikes me that how do we, while we're doing all of the things we're doing, empower maybe that next generation of entrepreneurs, men and women, to have trust themselves, you know? And that we're all,
both trust themselves, but also see themselves as, you know, valuable to the experts, you know?
Yeah.
I think that a lot of people don't know much about getting financing until that first step when they make that phone call, and maybe they ask some questions they're embarrassed to ask, but at least they're finally finding out, and then they get a level of expertise they never would have had before if they didn't have the courage just to go out there and go after it.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you're familiar with, like, so of course the government has WEBE certification, and there's a WEBEC, which is the corporate one, you know, to help get women in the diversity supply chain for corporations. And I'll be totally frank, for 2 years I've been applying, okay, for 2 years. So it's not the money, because I have the money. I mean, there were times where I was like, oh, I don't know if I have the $300 application fee this month, right? But I mean, it's not a fund issue. I just have this feeling that when they look to certify me, they're going to say, yeah, you're not really a business. Like, I'm so sure that report card is coming. I was just recently in the last few months at an event, and she looked and said, I said, but you have to look at financials and you have to look at this. And she said, to see they exist. I said, I don't understand. She goes, the main thing we're looking at is, are you really a woman business owned? And we can say you are. Or are you faking your women business owned? It's really a men-owned business, but they put you in 51% so they can go after this money. And I'm like, well, there's not even men. There's barely men as subcontractors. You know, like, we'd be like, you know, it's like, it's a whole female team and I own it. She goes, that's what we're coming to verify. But just that little doubt, successful business, we have people on board, we've got contractors, and we've got outsourced, and we're looking at employment and health benefits this year, because chambers of commerce and organizations can now offer health benefits, and we've always wanted to do that, but we were too small. So we're looking at those options. I mean, which I feel like are real, sustainable, caring business, entrepreneurial things, and I'm too scared to fill out the paperwork to get certified. So you can imagine where financing falls on my list, right? Like, I'm going to pay them to verify that I'm woman-owned. And I'm like, ooh, what's going to happen, right? And I want to just be, I thought I decided to just be very frank in this podcast, because I feel like we sometimes don't hear that story. We hear this miracle, I was at the bus stop, I was homeless, and now I do this with millions of dollars. Like, it magically, fairy dust got sprinkled. Or people just say, you know, you just do it, believe in yourself, girl, and go do it. And it's like, well, I do believe in myself, but I'm nervous too. I don't want to mess up. I don't want to commit to financing or a loan or a credit card. You know, we used a little bit of just credit card debt. And I think for the first 10 years we were in business, that was it. We were strictly cash and waiting on accounts receivable. And what's your experience with finding small business, women-owned business, when they come to you in those kind of situations? Like, I was just so terrified to borrow money and fail that it's like, well, we're not buying pens this month because the check didn't come in from this consultant, so we got to wait for pens or whatever the little doodad you need for marketing. What Rachel and Christy both, and at least jump into, like, what's your experience been with stories like that?
Kind of comes down to how much money they think they need to borrow and what the purpose of borrowing the money is for. Some customers will come to us and say, we need a line of credit because we want some working capital and we don't want to use our personal credit cards anymore. That would be a perfect time to jump over to a line of credit. We also have that customer that comes to us and says, yeah, I think I want to establish a line of credit because I need to purchase 2 more trucks for the company and we need some new equipment and probably should up our inventory. Okay, well, that's not a line of credit purpose. That's a long-term asset on a short-term loan. And so I would say the takeaway from this would be that the purpose of your loan has to match the purpose of what you're using the funds for. So if your purpose is a long-term asset, you're going to need a term loan, a longer-term loan. If you're looking for just that quick monies in between your receivables as you're waiting for that check to come in, that's a line of credit use all day long. And so I think understanding that and understanding what the uses of funds are for would be the first step to help somebody understand.
I think also another good piece of advice, no matter how large the loan request is, because we see everything from $500 requests to $1 million. And no matter what the size is, knowing, like Christy said, that you have very specific loan purposes in mind, that is going to help the loan officer feel better right away. Because the scariest phone call I get is if someone calls and says, how much can I qualify for? And I'll say, what are you looking for? You know, what are you looking to use the funds for? And the less specific they can get, the more hesitant I am. Because if someone, even if they're, maybe they have like a five-step plan where like eventually they're going to want a large amount of capital, but they're starting with something small and tangible. You know, I can help them reach that sometimes. And that's really fun. Like, it's really fun to get to work with somebody who is just establishing credit with a really small loan, maybe for a van for their work, or, you know, a piece of equipment for their bakery, or a high, like, intensive vacuum cleaner for their cleaning service. You know, I see loans that are so small like that, but that are just that one step down the road towards establishing business credit.
Yeah.
Towards finally understanding that loans aren't always bad. Loans can be a really, really helpful piece of growing your business. And the more specific and the more tangible folks can get, no matter what their experience is, the better sense I have of if I can help them, and that they are on a very like specific plan and track, that they have a vision and they kind of know how to get there. Even if they don't know every detail, they have the broad kind of outlines that I can help them to reach those goals if I know where they're going and they can communicate that to me.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think it's very encouraging. It's part of why we wanted to do this topic, was just to get feedback on, like, so, you know, if someone's out there listening and they're like, wait, I could get a loan for $500. Like, I thought I just had to save that up or ask friends and family, which a lot of small entrepreneurs do. I'm going to super coupon so I have enough money to do this, you know, all those kinds of stories. And then I think just realizing that at the end of the day, you know, the point of a lender is to lend the money, right? You know, I mean, if it's a reasonable request and it's people that are, the underwriters feel like this is a risk management we're willing to take, that, I mean, if you never loan money, you're probably not fulfilling your function at the bank, Christy, I would guess.
That's correct. And one of the other big misconceptions is that banks are cash flow lenders. So to Rachel's point earlier, you want to make certain that all of your revenue is being tracked and being measured, because that's where we're going to measure your abilities to repay the loan.
Right.
That's our number one repayment resource, is your abilities to do that. So many people will come to us and say, I realize I don't have any income coming in, but that's because I don't want to pay taxes. Okay, that's fantastic that you've got a CPA that's got your tax bill so far down the chain, but you have no revenue now to pay me back. And their response will be, but I have $500,000 equity in my building. Well, banks are traditionally not equitable lenders. We have resources out there where I can refer you to somebody that might be able to do that.
Right.
But I think that is another big area that is misconcepted with financing and what is available out there. The banks are going to look for cash. Cash is king.
And even an alternative lender like Axion needs to see the cash flow is there. And the reason for us as a nonprofit is that we are unwilling to make a loan if we can't show that it can be paid back. Our whole goal is to help people build their personal and business credit and grow their business and succeed. And if we can't show on paper that they have the income to make a monthly payment of the size of the loan that they want, why on earth would a nonprofit set someone up for failure like that?
Right.
And so, yeah, I'll echo the importance of reporting income and having a bookkeeper that's on board with that. And I want to add one more thing that I don't know if it's a good transition or not, but it just needs to be said during this. For people who are starting a business or looking to grow their business, I just want to throw out there, look into financing with their local bank, with their local credit union, with Axion, if they don't think they're bankable, any of us, and make sure that they are just starting that conversation about capital, so that the loan is not kind of an attempt to like get out of a tough situation. And here's an example.
So before you need it,
yes.
In a sense, like before you're in crisis mode.
Here's an example of the worst conversations I have. It's when someone says, hey, I started a business. I maxed out all my credit cards. I spent all my savings. I borrowed money from my family. and I need a loan right now. And I can't show that there's any money left to pay that loan back because everything's been maxed out. And so even if someone is afraid of taking out a loan, start that conversation with their banker, with Axion, with someone, with Prestamos, with CIC. These are all other alternative lenders. And get that conversation going so that you're borrowing money at the right time. So you borrow it before you need it. You borrow it at that kind of that intersection of you have this idea for growth and you know it's going to work. And instead of, you know, putting all your savings into it or maxing out your credit cards and trying to refinance that later, you are taking that step to try and get a loan first or a line of credit, whatever is more appropriate. Because no matter what, like someone coming to us with everything maxed out, like it's a horrible conversation to have to say, I'm so sorry, but
you're too late.
Yes.
You're too late. Yeah.
And if we can stop one listener from doing that, I'd be pumped. I'd be so happy because so much can be done with a small infusion of capital with someone, a bank or Axion believing in them.
It's interesting. So yeah, it's a perfect transition. So a couple things. We're at the halfway point, if you can believe it already. We've already blown through over 30 minutes. So this is Ask the Gals with Two Busy Gals. We're on Tucson Business Radio X once a month, coming to you with just different conversations. We've decided to go the direction of focusing particularly on women in business, ways in which social media can help or spread the word, or can be a distraction and cause problems. And so this month we're talking about women in financing. And so we're going to change gears a little bit and kind of look at why women may not be getting or pursuing financing. So we've talked a little bit about your experiences, of course, with Axion and Commerce Bank of Arizona. Did I get it?
You got it.
Yes. Okay. Commerce Bank of Arizona. So Christy and Rachel. So Lisa, you've got some interesting stuff for us from the American Express report.
I do. From the 2018 State of Women-Owned Business Report, commissioned by American Express. The good news? Research finds women are starting 1,821 new businesses a day. The bad news? Women lead 4 in 10 businesses in the U.S., but most are actually one-woman shows, according to the analysis. Their ventures make up about 8% of all employment and account for only 4.3% of total revenues. Women founders who apply for bank loans also receive about 45% less money than their male peers, according to a different study released earlier this year by Biz2Credit. Rachel and Christy, do your organizations have any specific programming geared towards reaching these female business markets?
Do you want me to start, Christy?
Yeah.
All right. So Axion, by its mission, is trying to reach underserved clientele. I think it's 84% of our loans go to either a combination of women, minority, or low income, or all three entrepreneurs, which we're pretty proud of. Within Tucson specifically, we partner with the YWCA Women's Business Center a lot. The Hispanic Chamber of Commerce actually just launched some center for women entrepreneurs as well. We make an effort to go to events and networking things they have. We also have, it's called the Tory Burch Foundation. The Women's Foundation of Southern Arizona has a program where I believe what happens is for women entrepreneurs who take loans with us, after a certain amount of payments have been made, their interest rate goes down, or they get some sort of like check in the mail that like rewards them for something. Either way, financial incentives to just show women entrepreneurs basically like, hey, we see you and that you're doing a great job with this. And then beyond that, I would just say that for our women outreach, there's also Phoenix area initiatives that we're part of. So AWI, which is like an SBDC program up in Phoenix, we regularly go to their workshops and present. And again, it's women entrepreneurs there. So we definitely make an effort in our outreach to get to those places where we can find women entrepreneurs.
With the community banks, I mean, we're governed with Equal Credit Opportunity Act. So we can't discriminate. That would probably be our biggest addition to supporting women-owned business, for example. We're going to partner with people like Rachel and like some of the other programs that she's mentioned the other thing that all banks, whether they're a large corporate big bank or a very small community bank, we all have a department known as the Community Reinvestment Act. So we actually get kudos and kind of a attagirl mark from the government when we're serving loans that are in underserved areas and populations and nonprofits, and, you know, does the loan benefit a community that's in an area that's a women-based area or a minority area? Mm-hmm. So I would say that's pretty much where the banks are. We wouldn't have anything specific to that, but we certainly have the resources and the abilities to educate people and get them to the places that do have those programs.
Excellent. So I think truthfully, my company applied for our first, was a loan, wasn't a line of credit. But we had some reasons we wanted to do the loan, in relationship rather than the line of credit, which happened to do with the payback rate, because I knew a year from now to have shown that we borrowed this amount and paid it back, would show ability to pay timely. And so that next, when I said, oh, I'd like, you know, say I want $50,000 or $100,000 line of credit because of going for larger government contracts or corporate contracts, which are notoriously slow pay. The largest companies we've worked with, they did not, if you got net 90, you were doing a cartwheel. It was not unusual to be looking at net 120, net 180 for thousands of dollars. And you've had to expend the money to provide the service, but you're not getting paid in that timely fashion. And so, but I also know going to ask for a $100,000 line of credit when, you know, you're just beginning to show those contracts coming in, it'd be nice to have some, oh, look at this little loan I paid off at this bank last year. I mm-hmm. borrowed it. We paid it off. We had no problem. Mm-hmm. But I was very informative to find out, like, what makes more sense for loan and line of credit kind of information. Mm-hmm. And I have no doubt that we were part of Community Reinvestment because this was a big box bank. We have an account there, and they relentlessly pursued us. And, like, it had to be an application by the 31st. Like, it couldn't be January 1st, couldn't be January 2nd. It had to be in by the 31st. And I kept thinking, they have some number they're trying to achieve. Like, I've lived long enough, just had my 50th birthday. I'm like, I'm some box on some something. And they're like, she has the ability to pay back. She's pre-approved. I mean, stuff was coming in the mail. Same bank. Mail, phone calls, emails. When do you want to apply? And I thought, all right. So I can remember sitting there on maybe the 30th and going, okay, well, I guess I have to do it online. I don't even have anyone to call. Oh, okay. And I'm like, well, this amount or this amount? This amount or this amount?
I mean, if they were that pursuing you, though, maybe they'd just show up at your door if you asked.
I was wondering. They may have. And so it was really a little bit of a lark because I was nervous. And this isn't something that I'm private about. I went through a rough divorce. There was a bankruptcy. Then there was the divorce. Skin in my teeth, rebuilding stuff. Couldn't even get a Target credit card, right? So I wasn't going to get business, nada, nothing, you know? And so I thought, oh, I'm probably not even going to get this, you know, but whatever, we'll put it in and see what happens. So it was kind of a bit of a lark. I mean, I knew it would be beneficial, but I didn't even think I'd actually get, even with all that pursuit, I still didn't believe I'd get it. Mm-hmm. Phone call like January 3rd. You've been approved. We just need to do this and this. What? You know? But I didn't realize how much it would change as a business owner. I'm not suggesting anyone follow my role model there. Call these amazing women. Get good help with it. Go to the Women's Business Center. I am on marketing for SCORE, so I had no excuse. You know what? But I want to be full disclosure on that because I think sometimes we have those little voices on our shoulders or in our head that are holding us back. Because when I looked at it, we've been able as a business to go as far as you can waiting on accounts receivable for three people. The mm-hmm. only way we can get bigger is to add more staff, which is a cost. We've got to have money to add the staff. And if we add the staff, we can meet the marketing demand. We know what our flow is. We know how to get our customers through the system. We know how to get, you know, our $12,000 to $40,000 a year contracts. I just need more bodies. Mm-hmm. And I can't have more bodies while I wait for while I'm running around trying to close an account and manage staff. And I just really looked at it and said, we're either going to grow or my sister and I just have to be some little freelance 1099 consultants ourselves. Either we're a company or we're not. And so for us, that became the critical financing question, was what are we going to do? And so now it's like, oh, well, Lisa, we have pens and you can have another name tag to go to a networking meeting because we're not just paying for the networking meeting and paying you. And it sounds silly, and I don't mean it to sound silly. I mean, I kind of have a goofy sense of humor. But to have that cash flow for those basic business things, if that makes, you know, and figuring out what those are, where even where things are properly categorized, you know. We have an event. We have a monthly class we do. And for the, at the beginning, I said, okay, it's just going to be marketing. We charge a nominal fee for people to come to the class. We try to break even on the cost. But I started getting a little loopy, and I was like going to all these networking meetings, trying to get more people in the room. It was before we brought Lisa on board. And my sister, my business partner, said, what are you doing? Like, you're burning out to get people to come into a room that's about awareness and marketing, and you're not servicing our higher end clients. Like, you've flipped the whole process. And she said, what's the point of the product? What's the point of that training monthly event? What's the point and outcome of that product? Awareness and marketing. You don't get awareness and marketing for free. You're trying to make money on awareness and marketing. If you just broke even or had a little cost, that's what that event is. So I think that's sometimes challenging too, is for businesses to be clear on what are you, especially service-based businesses, what are you selling and where is it categorized?
Always, always sell the benefit, not the product.
That's say great more about advice. That. So say more about that.
I could tell you, you should come to Commerce Bank and get out of the big bank, and you should open up your business accounts, and you should open up your primary accounts, and you should get a line of credit with me and not.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm selling you my products. But if I said to you, as a small community bank, I'm available to you to talk to you personally face to face. When you get my voicemail at the office, it says, if you need to reach me, my cell phone number is. I'm available to you 24/7 to some extent.
I bet you sleep sometimes.
Yeah, I was going to ask. Do you sleep?
I can tell you what the benefit is of banking with somebody smaller. I have the president of the bank in the office right next to me. I can make local decisions. I understand our economy. I have many relationships with other businesses that I might be able to turn around and refer to you.
Mm-hmm.
So those would be the benefits. The benefits would be that I can have faster turnaround for you. I can make local decisions. I can get you involved and refer business to you. That you're going to sit up and go, you're going to refer business to me? Whereas I'm just asking you to come open up all of your business accounts with me. You're like, yeah, well, that's a pain in the neck. And what's different from that bank account to the one I'm at right now?
Right. No, I mean, those are great points. And I think that's a message we want to get out as well, is how do you develop those partnerships? And I think that's the next stage we're at as a business, is looking at, okay, what are those strategic partnerships that make sense for the way we want to grow? So
it comes down to relationship. You need a relationship with a banker.
Absolutely.
You need a good CPA. In some cases, you may need a good attorney to help you with some of your business decisions. And having those people in place on a consistent basis will...
And from the beginning.
Absolutely.
And from the beginning. I tell people that a lot. I say, you know, just really think about what are those critical, absolutely must-have resources at the beginning. And then figure out how to build your plan from there.
Right. Because if you're not reaching your goal, never change the goal, but you might need to change your plan.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So a little bit of a subject change here. So this is kind of interesting. This was women are more concerned. This is very interesting. So last month when we talked, what the statistics came out and said, women are more conservative and don't overstate their projections. So what happens is when they go to places and it's like, what's your goal? Like, here's your history, right? So you guys are only going to loan or based on what we can prove. But also, I'm sure there's conversations about, okay, so based on what you can prove, we can give you access to this much capital through whatever format. Then what is the next level? And I thought this was so fascinating. They said when women, this was at University of Connecticut's Technology Incubation Program, When women pitch investors, they pitch realistic numbers. So it's a little bit different than traditional, even a non-traditional bank financing. It might be true investment. They will pitch their real numbers, like, I know I can achieve this. But they said men typically overstate and exaggerate their targets. And because it's so expected that in pitch meetings, projections will be way beyond, that people who are in those conversations tend to, in their mind, be thinking, well, okay, you're saying you're going to be at 100,000, but it's really going to be about 60. And that women tend to not want to overstate and be so dead on accurate that they put themselves at a disservice in those conversations. So I was just kind of curious. They said that primarily investors, bankers, venture capitalists, overwhelmingly or predominantly white males still in this country. That's why the young woman, Arlen, well, she's 30-ish, so to me it seems young, but the young Arlen Hamilton, it seems very young. Everyone's getting younger.
34, it's like, so old. Oh, man.
It's getting so young. It's like, everyone's getting younger. Not to disparage her experience, but why she stood out so much and probably why she became so viral on social media is there's some research that shows people who invest, like, they subconsciously or sometimes consciously invest loan to people who look, feel like them, sound like what they're expecting to hear. And so when someone comes in who is drastically different, looks different, their model's different, maybe their whole business model, maybe they happen to be LGBTQ and their whole business model is on that community and it's some sort of insider thing that person across the table is so far removed from. So I was just kind of curious if you could share at all, what stories have you potentially heard of, not necessarily yourself, but of people trying to feel challenges around that area, feeling like, I don't feel like when I'm going for funding or when I'm going for resources that I'm taking maybe as seriously as other businesses.
I would start with just a funny little story about the projection thing that you brought up.
Mm-hmm.
As a lender, when we see those sky-high projections, I mean, it is not a good thing for us to see, because if we feel that they're over-exaggerating or don't have a realistic idea of what's possible, I mean, it's not going to help them.
Yeah.
And so I've had a few applications I've looked at. One in particular stands out in my mind. It was a guy who, young guy, looking to start a business, was really excited about it and was convinced he'd be a millionaire within 3 years. And I mean, my job is then to kind of gently and kindly bring that back to reality.
Right.
And say, we're going to need different projections that are based off of actual plans. And, you need to kind of flesh this out more. And so I would say, just in the note about the projections, I love seeing conservative projections.
Mm-hmm.
Because it means that person is planning for a realistic understanding of what can happen, because every startup or business going through growth will find some obstacle or unexpected thing that throws them off a little. So conservative projections are better.
I'm curious to know what his backup was of that $1 million. Like, why did he think that? And what did, because I'm sure he has to fill something out to prove why he thinks he'll be a millionaire. What was his backup?
I mean, it was all just based off of pretty unrealistic expectations of what he could do on his own. It was going to be a one-person operation, and he just expected everything would go as well as possible. And so I, again, gently and kindly brought that back to reality and had him redo those with an advisor from the SBDC. I think that was a local person that could help them see, okay, for this type of industry, this is where you start, and these are the factors you need to consider. So
I would agree that you want to see somebody coming in with somewhat of a conservative approach that says they're thinking and that they understand that there is a fallout. There could be some unforeseen circumstances that might happen that would impact their markets, or maybe just something in general that they didn't even think about that would, competition, for example,
or even another recession. I mean, these are things we can't control, but we have to still have them in the back of our mind.
We're changing technology. That
mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely right.
That changes everything.
And you want projections to be sustainable. So when we're looking at a projection, we want to see, where did you come up with that number? how did you come up with that number? And realistically, is that something on a historic basis for that industry type? Does that make sense? In other words, if he tells me it's a donut shop, it better look and feel like a donut shop, not a nursery or a jewelry store, for example, mm-hmm. because the models are completely different. And so some people have pipe dreams, and that's not necessarily the actual when we do a spread, for example, on an analysis, it'll actually break it out to that industry type and tell us what percentage they're in their industry. So it'll raise a huge red flag if they're way out of line with a projection or even their revenues. You'll want to know, why is this so much north from the norm?
And all of this just to say that we don't want to encourage people to not believe in big things or have big sure. dreams, but they should be really aware early on, especially for either a startup or someone planning to grow their business, to lean on their network, to remember that women are really good collaborators. And so when they have connections in their community, don't hesitate to lean on them and to ask for assistance from, you know, whatever business resources that they're going to, SCORE or SBDC or the YWCA, the Hispanic Chamber, whatever it is, mm-hmm. To lean on those resources so that whatever plan they have is just going to get better and better. And then when they're ready to come to look for financing. And it's impressive to us when we see a business plan with projections that look really spot on. I mean, we know that's an extra layer of security that we feel when we read through something and see that it makes sense.
Well, because you're also measuring their abilities to manage the business. Mm-hmm. Because somebody can be an expert in their field, but they're not necessarily an expert to manage. They're not necessarily an expert to go out and market themselves. That's why they would hire two busy gals. That's mm-hmm. why, you know, they would go to their CPA to do the QuickBooks, because exactly. that's causing them anxiety at night. So it comes back to those relationships again.
We just talked about that. I had a meeting over at SCORE with someone who's working on marketing. And I said, I always worry, we have a lot of entry-level points, you know, things where people can get help for $100 a month, $200 a month, which I consider pretty nominal for part of their marketing. You know, mm-hmm. once you're past a one-person shop or you're a direct sale, something like that, which actually we started in. So we have a permanent set aside in services that we offer at a lower cost to women who are in multi-level marketing and direct sale, because we feel it's one of the most powerful models for women who don't believe they have whatever it is to start a business, whether that's the background, the education, the money, the socioeconomic status, that we will set aside and charge almost very less than our marginal, you know, a margin of our things. And we have people who say, how can you do that? And I said, well, when I know what my budget is, you know, when I know my numbers, I can say, we can do two coaching clients, not at $100. We can do it at $25, but they meet this category. And it's not like we say we offer a scholarship. We don't market it. We don't talk about it. When the opportunity comes up and someone's like, boy, I really like that coaching. And you'll see that like burning hustle in them, like, okay, it's how much? And you can see them thinking like, how many lipsticks is that? How many, you know, shakes is that? How many whatever, right? And you see that. I'm like, you know what? Let me talk to my sister. Alexis is a certified direct sale coach with the Direct Selling World Alliance. And she'll go, offer them the $25 an hour. Let's do it. We can fit that in. And so I think one of the things for me that's empowering about knowing your numbers is you know where you can do some give back to kind of reach that hand back and help the next business come up, because you're like, can I afford, you know, 2 hours at this price a month and 2 hours at that, you know? And those are things we're looking at how to formalize in our business plan as we grow. How much of revenue, in a sense, or revenue earning time potential can we dedicate, and why do we do it? Because it's a passion for us. We own the company and we can. Mm-hmm. You know, and so it's just kind of that's the message I like getting out to people, you know, because we look at that and we're like, hey, we can do this. So, all right. So, Lisa, look, there's some stuff here from Morgan Stanley. This is the last topic we're going to talk about, because we're actually just about out of time, which it feels like I just said it was 30 minutes and now we're practically out of time. So this was a Morgan Stanley report. This was fascinating statistics.
A new report released by Morgan Stanley found that the majority of investors and bank loan officers do not think there is a funding imbalance for women and minority-owned businesses, or WMBEs, in the United States. Specifically, 80% of respondents believe that WMBEs get the amount of capital that they deserve to run and grow their businesses. However, this belief does not align with the reality of the investments being made. In fact, investments in WMBEs are 80% lower than the median investment in businesses overall. This means that investors have a large blind spot when it comes to how they are investing in these businesses. As providers of funds to businesses, Rachel and Christy, why do you think that is?
Or does that surprise you at all? I was a little surprised by that. Like the viewpoint that the money is going out pretty equally, but the statistics showing it doesn't go out to those businesses equally.
I think it comes back to what the purpose of this radio talk is all about. Women don't ask.
I think you're right.
I think we don't.
Yeah.
I think we don't.
I think we're afraid, for sure.
I mean, we've been having this conversation since last month with just casually with business people, you know, that we know. And two of the people on the panel last month when we were like, oh, here's 10 things that hinder women in business. And it was like, you know, this. Oh, going after financing. Women tend to not go after financing. And two people on the panel were like, I think that needs to be the show next month. Like, talk about this. We need more information about this. Like, why don't we go for financing? And one of the young women, Morgan Lang, so we had three people, and one's in their 20s and in the first or second year of business. Shelly's in probably her 7th or 8th year of business. She's in her 40s, I think. And then Allison is in her 60s, and she ran a very non-traditional commercial building business, Allison Lombard, for 20 years. She's not doing it now, but she has that experience. And it was just interesting that Morgan actually has followed up with me like 3 times. Okay, so what are the resources? Who's going to be talking about this? When are we going to have the information? And I wanted to be like, yes, like here's this 20-something-year-old businesswoman. She's a year or two into it, you know, really trying to do everything you can to be mindful of your business, saying, well, when do you go for financing? I need to find out about that. I need to get some more information. I'm like, yes, get it now. Don't be piddling around like me, doing this, doing that, borrowing money from mom, doing this. You know, it's like, go for it. Get, I think what we were talking about, those pre-need relationships.
If it makes you feel any better, Morgan's already reached out.
Yes. All right.
I did send her your name.
Good.
I said, here's who we booked. I think this is the right fit for you first, because she's really kind of figuring out what her business is. She does a translation and interpretation, and she's wonderful.
Yeah. I would say it's interesting because that report, I mean, I don't know, and I don't have enough direct experience within, you know, the traditional banking system to feel that necessarily, because I work literally for a nonprofit that is trying to help more women
bridge the gap
and low income folks. And the bankers that we work with are also very much on board with that. You know, we have so many good referral partners that regardless of what their actual bank is doing kind of on the big scale, you
sure.
know.
Sure. And there's banks traditionally have so much regulation and federal oversight and things you can and can't do.
But I will
do.
Say that that bankers can make a huge difference when they are, you know, when they know their community well, when they're embedded in their community and knows, you know, these are the resources to kind of help folks get equipped. And so I would say that those statistics don't surprise me necessarily. I just thankfully have a very different experience with the, you know, the finance community in Tucson especially. I have a lot of bankers and loan officers who regularly are trying to go the extra mile for their clientele.
I feel there's a big initiative. We're members of Local First. We're legacy members of Local First Arizona, and they do a big push on Local Banking Month. Okay, maybe it's not called Local Banking Month, but it's Bank Local, and they do a lot of events and outreach. Mm-hmm. And it always kind of hits me that I feel that that's a very Tucson flavor to it. Having run my business in another larger city, it was city capital, we were in Columbus, Ohio, there were sort of alternative banks. They were known sort of more for projects for like very underserved populations. But if you kind of were like had a little income, had a job, had a house, you like you didn't quite fit for the kind of underserved nonprofit alternative banking. So you only had a lot of choice of what I call big box, the big guys. So I do feel there's something in our community that we can help support and encourage. There's no question both of your organizations and you ladies are going to be shared, because we talk to a lot of entry-level people come to our classes, and they're looking for these resources. And so we absolutely will be sharing your information with them, because we want just to figure out how people can get that good mentorship, that good pre-relationship, so they aren't coming saying, I've had people come to me and say, I got to go get a loan because I have this, this, and this, and everything's maxed out. I'm like, I don't know who's going to touch you for $5,000 anyways. You know what I mean? Like, it's little baby stuff. Because some of even the local credit unions I talked to were like, we don't really want to start until $50,000. I mean, they should apply for a credit card. It could be a business credit card, but we don't want to be thinking of anything else. So
I don't want to commit Christy to this, but I do want to throw out there that I know Axion could go do a presentation as well if you want, to any sort of
wonderful
group of your entrepreneurs. And
we're looking at doing some day-long activities and having different people come in and have different, as they come to us for social media help, and then it's like, no, actually you need that and that and that, and then you can do marketing. You know, right. It's like, well, we got to do these. So we're at time. I don't know how it happens, but this is Ask the Gals. I want to thank Lisa Benson, my co-pilot, I don't know what I'd do without you. So you're part of the family. You're part of the business. You can't go anywhere.
Thanks.
You're telling her, no, you can't go anywhere. Rachel, Christy, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for just sharing your vision, and your personal stories. We appreciate that. Yes. So this is Ask the Gals, Tucson Business Radio X. We will be back here next month. Who knows what we'll be talking about, but it'll be about women, business, and social media.